Recording now for We Live Here.show. My America isn't easily defined.
My America is a place where everyone is treated equally.
My America is vibrant and diverse.
And my America is looking for a new kind of politician.
For me, my America is a promise that I really hope that I can keep and give to my children.
Hey guys, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim.
And we're still recovering from the long Independence Day weekend.
Yes.
You know what we're talking about.
The cookouts. Fun with family?
Yeah.
Fun with family. Mostly fun with family.
Fun with family.
Be real about it. Fireworks. I still got all my fingers.
Good, good. But what about the best part?
The barbecue?
Yes, the barbecue.
How could I forget? We got to get down to business, right?
We do. Real talk. Because of the 4th, we plan to make this week's episode a little different. We're not digging into any big social problems or breaking down public policy.
Frankly, we kind of need a summer break.
Totes.
All right. But if you happen to be one of those people who's like, you know what sounds really good right now? Like a deep dive on public housing policy.
Or education policy.
Sure. You can go back and check out all of season 2 anywhere you get your podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, on down the line. But back to that whole summer break thing.
Yeah. So we're taking a break from doing a bunch of talking, and we're going to do a bunch of listening.
So if you've been listening to our show over the last couple of episodes, you know what we're talking about here, because we've been asking you to complete a sentence beginning with "My America is," and then we asked you to send your answers to us.
And many of you did.
Yes,
a lot of you did.
Thanks.
Yeah. So throughout this show, you'll hear more of those voices and responses, some that were short and sweet and some that made us want to dig a little deeper.
And as a little bonus, Camille and I get in on the fun, too, with the help of our good friends over at Mashed Up Americans. That's a podcast out of KPCC in Los Angeles.
More on that later. So stay tuned, because on this episode, we shut up and start listening.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
We live here.
A project exploring
race,
class,
power,
poverty,
systems, and the people they touch.
I'm Camille Stanley.
And I'm Tim Lloyd. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here. So when we first put out our call for responses, we weren't really sure what was going to happen. But then we started getting voicemails like this.
Hi, Tim. My name is Carla Fletcher. I live in Ferguson. My America holds it to be self-evident that all of us, are created equal and entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. My America promises that...
And responses like this.
This is Conrad from St. Louis. My America is my chosen home. I am an immigrant, white man from Canada, but I have chosen to do what so many others choose, to come to the United States to make a life for myself. Together.
So there's obviously a couple of different themes there.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, as we were taking in these calls and messages, a few really stuck out.
You know, before we got into the studio, you were telling me about the one email response you received that you were just kind of like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, this was so compelling that I decided to hop in my car and drive to North St. Louis County to meet its author.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Look at you.
So this is Naisha Beverly, and it isn't long before she tells me all about how she loves the 4th of July.
Oh, man. July is my favorite holiday, partially because I love navy blue. but as a little kid, we used to go down to the VP Fair. You know, we probably did that every year. And then it got more and more dangerous.
Wait, what's the VP Fair?
The VP Fair. It's like the big event downtown. But yeah, it's like local vendors down there. You can get all the good local food. And they'll have fireworks at night and music. But it's just really, really crowded. And so once I got married and had little kids, then I don't want to take them down there with all the people. So usually I'll just cook. Invite some people over, you know.
So Naisha is in her 30s, and she has 2 kids. She's from St. Louis and has a job in healthcare administration. On the morning we met, she was working from home, and the family's large cat, Duke, didn't seem impressed as he lounged in the chair next to me. So under his watchful side eye, I asked Naisha to read to me what she wrote.
My America is not really mine, but it should be. Although my ancestors helped to build this country, I'm not welcome here. My very existence is a struggle. the basic human rights laid out in the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness do exist here, just not for me. Where do I begin to underline the injustice? How do I explain the despair? Or should I not? I may be called lazy. I may be called angry. Not pressed from the systematic chains that enslave me, but angry. Not tired from working twice as hard for half as much, but angry. Not overwhelmed from caring for my broken family, but angry. Why broken? Broken by slavery, because we spent the first 350 of our years here separated on plantation fields. Men, women, and children pulled apart, not allowed to marry or develop our family unit. Broken by Jim Crow. Broken by the need for a civil rights movement. Broken by the whitewashing of our culture and stripping of our identity. Where did I come from? What do I own and can claim as my own? What will my children be left with? Broken by the need for Black Lives Matter. Broken by the steady stream of genocide on our sons, by whomever's hand and for whatever reason. Broken by America's botched plan to use my race for development and then destroy us forever after. Many Blacks circumvent the system of poverty, poor education, lack of health care, traffic profiling, tickets, petty crime, jail, and mental illness from their plight. However, many generations cycle the system of poverty, poor education, lack of health care, traffic profiling, tickets, petty crime, jail time, and mental illness from their plight over and over and over again. My America, I don't ever feel ownership or belonging. Without faith, I'd feel mostly fear. I've long believed that the African American people were living out and suffering from symptoms of PTSD from our history here, unable to escape the trauma. I now know that it's not just us, but the entire country that is suffering from it. The whites only signs poison white minds just as much as they poison Black minds. Delusions of white supremacy playing out in white privilege with ignorance as the excuse. This is America's sickness and greatest weakness. Not sure if their America will ever recover from the way it began. God willing, it will.
Tell me about writing that.
You know, my whole day, all the way from school to work to where I send my kids to where I grocery shop, everything is affected by how race and just, you know, that is set up in our area. And it's just writing this, it was like therapy. Like, I need to get all of this out right now while I have, you know, opportunity.
Here's something else I found out about Naisha when I visited. She's actually at a crossroads, trying to figure out whether to leave the corporate world and to do something with social justice. She says this is important not only for herself, but for her two daughters, Kennedy and Reagan.
I hate to cut in here, but did she name her daughters after presidents?
That's what I thought, too. Mm. But when I asked her about this, about why her kids have these very American-sounding names, she gave me this explanation.
Why did I do that? Because my name is Naisha. Right? It is the African name. Nobody can say it. Nobody can spell it. Right? So when I named my kids Kennedy and Reagan, so that nobody would look at their names and say, oh, that's a Black girl, and not even give her a chance before she gets to the seat. You know, it's like, let's just give them racially ambiguous names so that they have opportunities. And it's a shame you have to think like that. With this.
So not after the presidents?
No way. Maybe Kennedy a little bit, but Reagan, absolutely not. No, it was about racial ambiguity. That's not after the people. No.
You know, listening to Naisha talk about her kids reminds me of a couple of other moms we met just a while ago.
Yeah, the ones from We Stories.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and for those of you who live outside of St. Louis, We Stories is a local nonprofit that popped up here in the wake of Michael Brown's death and the protests that followed.
Co-founders Laura Horowitz and Adelaide Lancaster set out to use children's literature to empower white families to start teaching their kids about race.
And to get at some of the themes Naisha was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm. To do that, every month, the duo sends out custom book lists, recommendations, and resources to families enrolled in their program.
There are nearly 300 families in the program right now, and the two moms say there are hundreds more on the waiting list. Adelaide and Laura usually come here, the Clayton Library, to pick out what books they should recommend for this summer.
So for July, we had been thinking about the idea of embracing the both and, the notion that both with parenting and with anti-racism work, there's kind of this perpetual duality of the good and the bad, the bitter and the sweet, the, you know, hard truths and the joy of discovery. And a lot of those things come up again and again and again. But we thought it would be really poignant to look at the month of July and the celebration of the 4th of July as a time to think about, like, the concept of our story as a country and America and the both and within that.
Both Laura and Adelaide were cool with us just kind of sitting in as they went through the books they wanted for July.
This one I'm super amped about because we just found it and it's new this year, and it's by Faith Ringgold. She's just a beautiful author and illustrator, and it's called We Came to America. So it starts with, "We came to America, every color, race, and religion from every country in the world." And even there, it has a nice, like, both and, because the next page says, "Some of us were already here before the others came." This other book is Barack Obama's Of Thee I Sing, A Letter to My Daughters. Yes, somehow he wrote a children's book in the last 8 years. I don't know, making us all look bad. But it's really, really sweet, like, letter to children of a parent saying, you know, "You're great. I see so much in you, and some of what I see." So this is a Langston Hughes poem, "I Too Am American," America, which is a really beautiful poem. It starts, "I too sing America," and then these next two pages say, "I am the darker brother. They send me to eat in the kitchen when company comes. But I laugh and eat well and grow strong. Tomorrow I'll be at the table when company comes." And then it's several just beautiful pictures of, like, the rolling amber waves and all of that. "Nobody will dare say to me, 'Eat in the kitchen then.'" Besides,
when it comes to a book about Juneteenth, both women agree it should be included in the selection.
Dear white listeners, if you didn't learn about Juneteenth in history class, you're not alone. Juneteenth marks the time when news about the abolition of slavery finally reached Texas and other parts of the South. And it's celebrated on June 19th by black families all over the country. I didn't learn about this in school, and neither did Laura or Adelaide.
This idea that when you're also the parent and learning something really, really significant, mm-hmm. and you're like, wow, like, well, I would really like my kids to not go 35 years without knowing what Juneteenth is. And what does it mean that I have gone 35 years without knowing what that is? Mm-hmm. I learned about it last year. I'm 36 now.
So. Laura says many parents, especially white parents, are nervous about talking with their kids about race, especially if that may bring up questions that they don't have answers for.
Sometimes it's easier to tell a story of, like, that was then and this is now, and now we're all, like, mm-hmm. kumbaya and it's great. Well, it's something I say to my daughter a lot about, like, the time scale and, like, how do we hold on to that. It's like, we talk a lot about there's good and bad inside of everyone, and there have been times in this country that, or the way our country was shaped, was that some people were treated more fairly than others, and that had to do with race and just the big frame of there was slavery and that was wrong. But I always say too, but there were always people who thought that was wrong. There were people who escaped from slavery. There were people who helped people escape from slavery. There were people who owned slaves. There were people who didn't own slaves. And kind of holding that, I think, has been an interesting conversation to emerge.
Still, finding this language to talk to kids, especially toddlers, takes practice.
Most parents were not early childhood experts. And many of us, to the extent that we have had an opportunity to explore racism and racial identity, we've done that as adults.
Right.
That comes up a lot, that for many of us, our own journeys really took off in college or at other times where our language capacity was at that level, right? And so that makes for a pretty big gap.
It strikes me that, I mean, part of what you're saying is that it's hard to to distill this stuff down into something that you can talk to a 2 or 3 year old about.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, and you have to be very precise about it, and that can make the parent uncomfortable, I think.
I think it's seemingly hard, but it's actually, I feel like the experience of our families is that it's not hard, but it's not something you do once, and it's not something that you get right and then move on. And so if you can think about starting this conversation and continuing this conversation with many principles in mind, that it's never done. You always are looking for what story are we telling, whose story is missing, is this, how do I know this truth that I'm saying? Do I know this to be true? Is it true for everybody? It's, you know, it's messy and real, and it's a practice, so.
You know what's so crazy? Like, I'm sitting here, like, listening to you three white people talk about this stuff. And I'm like, I don't remember as a child when we weren't talking about this. We do have this language, and we have had this language since we were babies, because it was our story. It is our story.
The purposes of our program really comes from, you know, if you look at the huge opinion divides that happened post-Ferguson, right? It was... And we say often, we can't, if our region isn't really telling the same story, they don't have the capacity to tell the same story. So what does it mean if one group of our population has been talking about race and the nuance of America and the nuance of truth and the multiple narratives their whole lives, and one whole group of the population has never had that conversation, almost never had that conversation, afraid to have that conversation?
And that's not just experiential. I mean, it could just be that you and I have different experiences, but yeah. There's like really strong research that shows these are the family patterns across America, that 75% of white families never or almost never talk about race, and it's the flip, it's the exact reverse for families of color. And that's, you know, research on family behavior. So what you're saying is what we've heard a lot from our friends and colleagues of color when we shared our idea. And some of what folks say is like, yes, I know these are great books and I have them and I know where they are, right? Because these are existing published books. Like, they're a very small part of the overall market for books, and there should be more. But there are many, many books. If you want to have this conversation in your home and you're seeking it out, you can find them.
If you're interested in finding some of these books for your own kids, books with diverse characters, stories, and perspectives on America, We Stories shared their July book list with us. It's posted on our website, weliveheresho.
And when we come back from this break, we leave the library in St. Louis and have a cross-country three-way conversation, which sounds it's very tantalizing to me, with a couple of journalists who just so happen to have...
We have a lot of spy friends. We can't tell you about them. It's a secret.
No, we're gonna have to keep quiet now. Now that things are official and there's other people on the line, let's talk about our spy friends.
Right now, though, let's share a few of the other My America responses we got.
My name is June, and I live in California. My America is a place of freedom. Many generations of Americans have fought hard to protect these precious rights. The right of freedom of assembly, the right of freedom of speech, and the right of freedom of religion. As the famous writer Voltaire said, "I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." At this time when we are going through an especially difficult election, we must always remember that diversity is the strength of our freedom, and that many diverse opinions make us a freer and an ultimately stronger America.
Happy 4th of July to any and all listening. This is Steve Harris, a semi-retired school teacher living in the city of St. Louis. My America is a house on a block where you hear different languages, where kids of color knock on the door for trick-or-treat, where neighbors pitch in on alley cleanup day, where you thank the cops when they show up for the summer block party, and kids get to sit in the fire truck. My partner and I have lived on this street for 20 years now. The tulip tree we planted on the curb strip now shades our front porch. Whatever your America is, my hope and prayer is that your rewards are as rich as ours in your own pursuit of happiness.
You know, we've heard from a lot of people so far in this episode, but it wouldn't be America if we didn't talk business, right?
Oh yeah, specifically the business of being American.
Which is where Amy Choi and Rebecca Lair of the Mashup Americans podcast come in.
If you've never heard of Mashup Americans before, you should definitely go check them out at mashupamericans.com.
And what these ladies are doing is way more than just a podcast. Amy is in New York and Rebecca is in LA, but through the power of technology and a little radio magic, we were able to get into the same virtual studio together.
And we start by asking them to explain a basic theme that runs through their entire show, something called Mashy.
Mashy is, to be a mashup is, are you living in a culture that's different from the one that your parents are from, right? Mm-hmm. That whether that's ethnicity, religion, race, there's all sorts of ways that, you know, just even in just a different country, that plays out. And I think, and then it's, or are you in a relationship with somebody who's kind of from a different cultural background? And finally, like, the world we live in is pretty mashy. The way that we interact with culturally different things all around us, whether that's the food we're eating or the languages we're hearing or the people we talk to and our friends and neighbors. So being mashy is just sort of like what our America looks like.
Speaking of that question.
Speaking of my America.
Go for it, Amy.
Well, we were joking before we can I say this? Maybe that's inappropriate. My America.
Yeah, 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 please,
it.
Please.
Jews
yeah.
and Latinos. No, I'm just kidding. But I would say that, you know, like my America is noisy. It is sometimes chaotic, and it is fueled by ambition of like the purest and most generous kind. I think, I'm a first generation immigrant here. My parents came to the U.S. in the 70s. They were among that first wave of Korean immigrants that came to the U.S. after the war. And I was the first person in my family to be born in the U.S. So my whole kind of American experience is shaped by this idea that we really did come here to find a better life, that, everything here was about possibility, and if you worked hard enough, you could make it happen. That's my America.
I cried. I think this is Rebecca. My America is really bright colors, really optimistic, embraces the kind of inherent tension of what life looks like when you're deeply rooted in your culture of your family and being part of a diaspora, for instance, but also really optimistic about the future and the opportunities that only happen in this country, like the opportunity to be and to get to be whoever you want to be, and to know that you're around people who aren't just like you all the time. That just like makes me feel alive and excited every day and always proud to be American.
Amy and Rebecca have a ton of experience in media and journalism, but they've taken this concept of a mashy America and turned it into a business model. If you ask them what that means, officially, you'll hear this.
So this is how we describe it. The Mashup Americans is a community. It's a content lab and a creative studio that advances stories at the intersection of culture and identity. And we like to help people and brands engage with Mashup America in a truly authentic way.
So basically, here's how this all plays out in the real world. They have a podcast. We know that already. They also have a website, which is mashupamericans.com. And then they sort of do this consulting work where they explain to companies how they can better connect with mashy Americans.
So talk to us about how this actually works?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think one of the, you know, it's not new for a company or a brand or, you know, a product marketer to want to reach a diverse audience, right? Like, everybody's dollar is the same color. But I think what has traditionally happened in advertising and in kind of in audience building and in reaching different demographics has been a lot of siloing. So there has been like a black targeted campaign or a Hispanic targeted campaign or an Asian sometimes targeted campaign. And what that means is that these audiences are never kind of crossing. You're never getting a really broad or actually accurate picture of what our lives actually look like.
There's an inertia that happens with businesses. Like, this is what we know. This is how we sell ads. This is how we know demographics to be. And it's hard when it's not as crystal clear anymore. When if you have like a Mexican, Colombian, Korean kid, well, like, you're like, uh-oh, where do they fit in my, my
that box? Kid that she's talking about would be my kid,
yes,
by the way.
Amy and Rebecca say this is starting to change, though.
Right. They point to this popular Netflix show called Master of None, which if you haven't checked that out yet, you definitely should. Anyways, it has a really, really diverse cast. But they say companies are still quick to section off various audiences rather than blend them in a more authentic way.
Yeah, they tell us about one company that thought it was doing a great job by making a Spanish language only version of its website.
And we went in and we were like, hey, guys, that great website, but that's not actually what your audience wants. What would have been more representative of them and their needs and like how they actually live their lives would have been to have Spanglish.
Right.
You know, something that actually blends together what their two cultural identities are and would reach a much broader group.
So how did they respond to that when you were said, well, you put all this time into this website that they felt like they really nailed it? And then you said, well, that's not really as authentic as it could be.
I think what happened was, it's actually great. We're like, phew, there's a need for our business.
Yes.
Yeah, woo! Didn't make this up.
Mashed up, you know, for the win.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, what can be hard is when you're living your authentic life, like we're all talking about, like that's just what our lives look like. And you're like, why isn't TV look like that? Or why don't ads look like that? Or why don't people? It's because the people in charge don't always understand that. And there's also, they're like kind of big machines and it's hard to make change.
Yeah.
But it's also, sometimes they just don't know. Like, you don't know what you don't know, right? That you are only reflecting the stories. You're like, well, Spanish, we got it. They actually, they were like, it was revelatory.
They were like, what did they say? I mean, like, were they just like, I can't, what was like their
literal? They were like, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense.
Something that we talk about a lot is like what our purpose, right? And like what we do as the Mashup Americans with our storytelling, with our business, is I think we like to say we build empathy, you know? So whether or not your world looks the same as ours, if we have enough empathy for each other, we can respect that both of those worlds are rich and valuable. And so that's what we hope to create with all the different kinds of work that we do.
Us too.
Yeah. I mean, I was
yeah.
thinking.
Yeah.
Thinking.
What does your America look like, guys? Let's turn this on you.
Oh, okay. And this, listeners, is when the interviewers finally become the interviewees. Dun, dun, dun.
After this break, you'll hear our responses to the question we've been asking all of you.
But first, a reminder that if you dig this show, you should follow us on iTunes.
Yeah, you should.
And you should give us reviews, too, like awesome reviews.
5 stars.
5-star reviews. And if you're one of our good friends listening on NPR One, thank you very much. Do us one little itsy-bitsy favor. Look down and click the interesting button. That really helps us out.
Yeah, enough of the shameless plugs. Back to it.
All right, here's our answers.
Do you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, as we've been producing this show, I've been thinking a lot about that and like how I would boil it down. And I think, yeah, I'll just be really honest. As a white guy, my America looks pretty good, you know?
I mean,
I don't know how else to say
mine
it.
Mine looks pretty good, too.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, but, you know, like traditionally speaking, it you know, didn't grow up with a lot, but I definitely have had great opportunities. And I never struggled to look around anywhere for examples of people who look like me who were really successful or popular. But I think, too, you know, with that comes the recognition that that is built on taking away those advantages from other people in this country. And, you know, I think my feelings about America are mashy, you know.
Yeah.
They just are. Mm-hmm. And that's just that's the America I live in. Your turn.
What about you?
I would say that my America is changing, but also very much feels the same. The same as my parents, the same as my grandparents, the same as my ancestors. Sometimes my America feels a little crazy. Mm-hmm. If America was like a Facebook status, it'd be like, it's complicated. Like, oh, it's so complicated. But, you know, at the same time, I totally relate to, like, it's very bright and I have tons of opportunities. And even though it maybe never felt like it was all mine, I think go through with the attitude like, oh, yes, it is. Or or I'm going to make it all mm-hmm. mine, whether or not, you know, it's handed to me or not. Ooh, we made it, guys.
Crossed the finish line. Still in vacation mode, though.
Oh, gosh.
Still in vacation mode from policy. We're going to bring you shows, though. Right?
We are, but we got a little bit more listening to do, mm-hmm. which brings us to our live show we've been telling you guys about. It's July 12th in St. Louis, and you can find more info at welivehere.show.
Right, and also on our website, which is, again, welivehere.show, not .org, not .com, it's .show, welivehere.show. Is a great list of diverse books you can read your kids this summer.
Yeah. We Live Here is produced by me, Camille Stanley.
And me, Tim Lloyd.
Sheila Newman is our editor.
And Cassie Morgan composed our theme music.
Although right now, we're listening to Trombone Shorty. And from St. Louis Public Radio, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.